Cloudy, the low 62. The wind will be light and out of the east. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 86 and a light east wind. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, the low 67 and a light wind from the east. Saturday, mostly sunny and warmer. Look for a high in the upper 80s and a light wind from the southeast. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low in the low 70s. Sunday, mostly sunny, hot, and humid. The high will be in the low 90s. Heat index readings will range from 100 to 105 degrees. Sunday night through Wednesday, mostly clear, continued hot and humid. Lows will be in the mid-70s and highs in the mid-90s. Heat index readings ranging from 105 to 110 degrees. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 70s to the low 80s. Most locations reported sunshine. At Rockford and O'Hare, 80 degrees. Bloomington, 79. At Carbondale, it was 85. In South Bend, 77. 79 at both Lafayette and Indianapolis. 80 at Terre Haute. In Evansville, 83 degrees. Willard Airport reported a mostly sunny sky at the top of the hour. The temperature, 80. The relative humidity, 54%. The dew point, 62. The wind out of the east at 9, and the barometric pressure, 30.03, and falling. And at 12:39, 82 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Illinois Republicans have been vocal about their opposition to the state's new congressional map. They've threatened to take legal action to prevent the map from becoming final. Illinois Public Radio's Mike Mohn reports such a move appears imminent.
The GOP has enlisted the help of former House Speaker Dennis Hastert in its crusade against the map. The Republican wasn't shy when asked about the party's main concerns about the new boundaries.
People kind of voted last November as a mandate, elected five new Republicans for the Illinois delegation, and this map basically eradicates all of those people.
Hastert says Republican concerns about the new map go beyond partisan interests.
The other issue is out there is the ability for the minorities to be represented. The Hispanic population in the state of Illinois is over 15%, yet they're relegated to only one representative district.
Some Latino groups have raised similar concerns. Hastert says his name won't be attached to the pending lawsuit, which he says could be filed as early as this week. He says his role is to lend weight to the argument that in addition to minorities, some communities won't receive adequate representation.
You have towns like Joliet and Aurora and Springfield and Rockford being diced up in many different ways, Bloomington.
The redistricting process was led by Democratic lawmakers who control both chambers of the General Assembly. The map was signed by Democratic Governor Pat Quinn in late June. State Senator Mike Noland of Elgin is a Democrat who sat on his chamber's redistricting committee. He believes the map will be able to withstand a legal challenge.
We bent over backwards to make sure that we listened to every stakeholder, or whether it be organization or individual, throughout the state. We held many hearings, both north, south, east, and west here in the state of Illinois.
Noland says some of the configurations are a big improvement over the redraw from 2000, when Republicans had a bigger say in the process.
How can you explain where a congressional district could go all the way from northern Illinois and in the shape of the letter C, just hook around almost all the way down into what most of us would consider southern Illinois, and then back up into central Illinois?
Noland is describing the 17th congressional district, which is often referred to as a rabbit on a skateboard because of its odd shape. It should be noted that when those lines were drawn, they were done so to protect both political parties. Matt Streb is a political scientist at Northern Illinois University. He echoes the point about the differences in the two maps. At the same time, he says the new boundaries clearly favor Democrats. He also says there's no question the legal action being pursued by Republicans is a last-ditch effort to protect their interests and that minority representation is not a driving factor. Streb says the court system has done a 180 on the argument for greater minority representation in redistricting.
They used to encourage that you pack minorities into one district. So you draw these heavily majority-minority districts. Since that time, though, they've kind of taken a step back and said, yes, you can consider race. As a matter of fact, you have to consider race and ethnicity. But that cannot be the sole factor.
Streb says that creates an interesting dynamic.
What the Democrats are going to probably fall back on is because the Hispanic population in Illinois isn't as compact as, say, the African-American population, the Democrats could argue it's very difficult to draw another majority-minority Latino district.
And Streb says adding another Latino district could be harmful to minority interests because it opens the door for surrounding areas to be represented by Republicans who have traditionally clashed with Latinos over various policy issues.
I'm Mike Moen.
As the sexual assault case against Dominique Strauss-Kahn appears to weaken, many in France are speculating about whether the former head of the International Monetary Fund can revive his political career. New charges in France and the nonstop media coverage of the saga seem to be weighing against him. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports from Paris.
32-year-old French writer Tristan Bannon says she had to fight to get Dominique Strauss-Kahn off her in 2003 after she met him in an apartment to interview him. Last week, she filed charges of attempted rape against Strauss-Kahn in a Paris court. Last night, Bannon gave her first television interview about the incident.
J'ai cru pendant 8 ans.
She said for 8 years she followed everyone's advice, from her mother to fellow journalists to legal advisors, not to bring charges against Strauss-Kahn, who was both powerful and the former husband of her godmother.
I thought I could forget it, put it in a box and put it away, but it hasn't been possible. The only way to put an end to this in my head was to go to court and let justice decide.
Anne-Elisabeth Moutet is a French columnist for the British newspaper The Sunday Telegraph. She believes Bannon is extremely credible and that her claims will not be easily dismissed by his friends and political supporters.
I think they are mad if they think that he can run again. With what's come out about his private life, do you think this man can go to international conferences? Do you think he can go and speak with the President of the United States in the White House?
Christophe Barbier is editor of weekly news magazine L'Express. He says the Bannon case could explode or fizzle out, depending on whether judges think there is solid enough evidence for a trial.
Even if this case doesn't go to court, these charges paint a psychological portrait of Dominique Strauss-Kahn as someone who cannot control his sexual impulses. That will continue to destroy his reputation and keep him from returning to politics.
Strauss-Kahn's supporters continue to argue that he has suffered a great injustice, but their numbers seem to be dwindling. Before his arrest in May, Strauss-Kahn topped the presidential polls in France and was seen as the man who could lead the Socialist Party back to power. But a recent survey shows more than 65% of French people don't want to see Strauss-Kahn run. And it's not just the womanizing. There's been a lot of focus in the French media on Strauss-Kahn's wealth and his fancy lifestyle in America. At a news kiosk on a busy corner in Paris's 18th arrondissement, Laurent Mazet is buying newspapers. Mazet, who describes himself as a left-wing voter, says the reports of Strauss-Kahn's behavior toward women are bad enough, but his values are also the wrong ones for France.
I think that it's a good thing that actually he doesn't come back to France and run for the presidential election, because he's a man who spends a lot of money in very expensive hotels. He's got a way of life which is contrary to the way of life of many French people.
Mazet says French people are now fed up with Dominique Strauss-Kahn and his problems. Pointing to a newspaper, he says the war in Libya, the euro crisis, and unemployment are the country's real problems. It's time, says Mazet, for France to leave Dominique Strauss-Kahn to his fate. For NPR News, I'm Eleanor Beardsley in Paris.
It's 12:46. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Harry Potter has headlined 7 films in over 10 years and brought in $1 billion in domestic box office sales. The 8th film opens at midnight tonight, and it already has sold more than $32 million in tickets. Here's Kenneth Turan's review.
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 turns out to be more than the last of its kind. Almost magically, it's also one of the best films of the entire series. It brings us back to the combination of adventure and emotion that conjured the book's popularity in the first place. Splitting the final novel into two parts enabled this film to concentrate on action. Harry and company search for the Horcruxes that contain hidden pieces of the evil wizard Voldemort's soul. Destroy those one by one, and the man will be weakened beyond measure.
He knows. You know who? He knows we broke into Gringotts. He knows what we took, and he knows we're hunting Horcruxes.
The trio of young stars, Daniel Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, and Emma Watson, are surrounded by a who's who of top-flight British acting talent. Alan Rickman as the devious Severus Snape has some of his best moments here.
If anyone here has any knowledge of Mr. Potter's movements this evening, I invite them to step forward.
And who can compare to the chilling Ralph Fiennes as the evil wizard himself?
The boy who lived, come to die.
All that talent couldn't have come cheap. And the other consistent factor in the Potter universe is the production's refusal to pinch pennies. The film's elaborate and expensive settings are enhanced for the first time with 3D effects which work best when the action is hot and heavy. The Potter films have rarely been daring, choosing superb craftsmanship over cutting-edge audacity every time. By this point, we don't need the film to be daring because the story itself is so involving. Near the end of the film, the great wizard Dumbledore speaks from beyond the grave and says, "Words are our most inexhaustible source of magic." It's not Harry Potter we think of at that moment, but his creator, J.K. Rowling. First and foremost, it's her we have to be grateful to for all these pleasures. And we certainly are.
Kenneth Turan reviews films for Morning Edition and the L.A. Times.
WILL surpassed its $2.1 million membership goal by more than $25,000. Thanks to your support, we're able to produce and purchase the programs you depend on. Thank you.
A popular exchange program has been bringing students from Afghanistan to America, but too many decided not to return home.
My mom, she thought I would be in danger if I returned to Afghanistan.
Because of their fear of a failing state, the U.S.-sponsored program is faltering.
This year, we decided that the costs are outweighing the benefits.
That story later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, July the 14th, 2011. It is Bastille Day in France, celebrated as the anniversary of the day.